You're listening to Movie Sucktastic.
Sounds like some bad movie.
Oh, and we're back. We're back again.
Let's whistle for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Welcome, everyone, to Movie Sucktastic. I'm Scott. That's Joey. And what are we reviewing, sir?
Lone Wolf McQuade.
Oh, a staple of my childhood, I swear.
I'm a loner, daddy. What? Wrong movie. Sorry. Oh, you know, it's interesting. The movie opens up and the music, and I'm like, somebody's watched Good, Bad, and the Ugly a whole bunch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They definitely did everything they could to emulate, what's this, Ennio Morricone?
I forget his name. Like,
yeah. Yeah. The guy that did all the Sergio Leone films, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, they're really going for that spaghetti Western feel. And you can tell that by the opening shots. The direction's very interesting in this. A lot of close-ups, I wonder if the film's ever looked as good as it does, like, watching it now.
No, this is a very good copy.
Yeah.
Blu-ray, really... It sounds good. It looks good. Still looks
good. But is it good?
You know, it's actually rated quite high on IMDb.
Yeah, but is it good?
No.
So here's the interesting thing. I watched it with Holly, and what she repeated over and over again during the last half hour was, this is a film for children. This is a film for little boys. And I was like, well, I was 10 when it came out, and I liked it back then. So yeah, this was a film for little boys. And it really points to that whole, this film is just another example of that whole 80s dichotomy where they were making adult films, but they were kind of, in a lot of ways, dumbing them down so that kids would keep digging them too.
Yeah. I mean, there's no nudity in this. There's barely any blood.
With all the gunshots,
I mean, the movie,
very little blood.
It's rated PG.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah. What did have an R rating because of the couple of F-bombs in there, but Chuck Norris argued to the MPAA how the film was like morally structured, and they actually redid it and gave him a PG.
Oh, yeah, because the difference back then, there was no 13 that did not come out for another year.
Exactly.
Due to Gremlins and Temple of Doom. I think, who created the 13? Was it Temple of Doom or Gremlins? I want to say it was Temple of Doom.
It was both of them. It was both of them. Those two films.
But Temple of Doom came out first.
Yeah, but it was the reaction to those two films that really cemented the need for a PG-13.
Yeah, okay.
Because they had to cater to Hollywood to make sure Hollywood could get asses in seats, but at the same time they kept making these adult films for kids, and it was becoming more and more noticeable.
Right.
Or yeah. Kids films for adults, whichever way you want to look at it.
So yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So, well, I don't remember what I was watching recently, but I was watching something that was PG, and there were 3 F-bombs. And topless nudity, and I'm like, oh wow,
yeah.
And it was only rated
scales PG. Are shifting. The scales have shifted. Yeah, it's not a. But anyway, yeah. Lone Wolf McQuade, a a product of my childhood, or I'm a product of this. Either way, you watched this as a kid on cable, like I did, right?
Oh yeah, we were a Chuck Norris household.
Oh, see, we weren't. This is the one Chuck Norris film that I watched repeatedly because it was on cable, and I enjoyed it. You know, as a kid, it was fun. I didn't remember a bunch of parts of the film because obviously,
my father and my mother, but in a lot of ways, my father loved Chuck Norris. Everything that he did was watched in my house. Everything, even his son. I mentioned this a little while ago, made a shitty action movie, and my father rented that because Chuck Norris's son was in it.
Now, this is also the first film that Chuck Norris has the his trademark beard with the bandana.
Right.
You know, this.
It was he was either clean shaven or mustache normally. Mm-hmm.
So this is his first bearded bearded appearance, one of many to come.
I think it stuck after that.
Yeah, it would become his standard look for Walker, Texas Ranger. Now, this film bears a striking resemblance to Walker, Texas Ranger in that he is a Texas Ranger in the film. Now, I know there was a lawsuit. They sued CBS, and I think there was an outcome, but the outcome was so complicated that I gave up on it.
Okay. You all right?
Yeah, just got noise in my background.
Oh, sorry. You were saying that there was a lawsuit. Now, Walker Texas Ranger...
It was just too complicated for me to follow through.
But Walker Texas Ranger, the TV show that he was in, was like a full decade later, or a little bit more. The lawsuit for Walker Texas Ranger... Like Lone Wolf McQuade or the production company that made Lone Wolf McQuade was suing Walker Texas Ranger, the TV show, not the other way around. Yeah. Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
And did they settle out of court or what ended up happening?
I get, like I said, the proceedings that I was reading, the account that I was reading was so complicated I gave up. So I have no idea what the settlement was.
Okay.
It just started talking about mergers and then I got foggy eyes. It's like, I don't care.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Yeah, I
stopped caring as soon as you started talking about it.
Wow.
I mean, I'm not a fan of that TV show whatsoever.
Oh, no. You know,
about the best thing that ever came out of that TV show are the Chuck Norris, the video memes where he's with the gun. And then he like shoots and then it just pans over to like fail videos. Like, you ever see those?
No.
No? So it's like he'll shoot the gun and then someone will slip on the ice. It's because that's about the most entertaining thing that ever came out of that show.
Well, and you have the whole Chuck Norris, you know, you can't shoot Chuck Norris or Chuck Norris doesn't do push-ups. That whole thing, Chuck Norris doesn't cry.
Yeah, Chuck Norris doesn't do push-ups. The earth pushes back against Chuck Norris.
Yeah.
Chuck Norris doesn't catch a cold. The cold catches Chuck Norris.
So, and I know we haven't talked much about the film yet, but, I mean, Chuck Norris is a part of the culture, so to speak. But I was thinking about this watching the film. So, yeah, he is a cultural icon, but he's not, I don't think he's culturally relevant.
You mean at this time?
I just mean overall.
Because at this time, he's famous for getting his ass kicked by Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
And Bruce Lee died, so they kind of went with him, you know? He became famous because Bruce Lee died.
Yeah, I mean, yes, he became an action star, but, I mean, let's be fair. It's not like he was in really good movies, and then he had a TV show for a decade or so. I don't think he really did anything that secures him a spot in the zeitgeist. I might be just going out on a limb there.
Right.
But I just think it's a weird thing. He's like this cultural icon, but what did he do, really?
Makes some really bad movies.
Yeah, that's roughly it. I don't know. I just but I remember this film as a kid. I loved it watching it. Obviously, there's slow parts where he's not shooting things that as a kid you would just wander off and do something else and wait for the good parts to show up. So the only part I really remembered was him shooting shirtless. Yeah. And the his super truck driving out of the grave.
Oh, I know. That is so ridiculous. He shows more skin than literally anyone in this film. And what's her face? I have it. What was her name?
Barbara Carrera.
Barbara Carrera. Yep. I mean, is now, it in her contract to not wear a bra with every outfit?
Yeah. I was going to say she wasn't nude, but they made sure that she was swinging free in sheer shirts, like every scene.
I know. It was pretty wild.
Yeah. Now, Barbara Carrera, she's been in a few films. Most notably for me, I got to double check this, but most notably for me. The what?
Emmanuel. Was she in one of those?
I don't know. I don't have any Emmanuel films in my collection. I'm just looking at what I have or what I've seen. So, the what sticks out to me is she was in Loverboy.
Oh,
Never Say Never Again. And that's right, she was in Condor Man.
Yes.
I remember Condor Man.
Oh, she was in the original Island of Dr. Moreau from 77.
Oh, was she? Yeah, I don't have
Condor
that.
Man in 81, Lone Wolf in 83, Never Say Never Again. She was a Bond girl a year later.
And like Never Say Never Again and Condor Man, those are two films I saw repeatedly as a child. Barbara Carrera was a substantial part of my childhood, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
You know, LQ Jones is in the film too. He plays a Texas Ranger.
He does.
Retired.
He retires in the beginning of the movie.
I think the last time we talked about him is he was the director of A Boy and His Dog.
Oh God, that's right.
I'm watching the opening credits. I'm like, I recognize that name from somewhere.
Well, you know what's interesting too? So there are two people in this movie that were in Night of the Comet a year later.
Oh, yes.
Which is his partner.
K.O. Played by Robert Beltran.
Right. And his ex-wife. The mom.
That's right. Robert Beltran was also in Eating Raoul, which is a favorite of mine.
Ah, that's a good one. Yes.
Yeah.
Also with Mary Warrenoff. So it was kind of like a little bit of a circle there, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And the Ewok midget or dwarf. What's his name? Daniel Frischman. He's in here.
He was an Ewok?
Yeah. Now, he...
I thought Warwick Davis.
The interesting thing with his character,
Warwick Davis was also an Ewok. Okay.
Yeah, there were more than one Ewok. Yeah.
Yes, there was more than one. What?
His character being in the wheelchair made me curious, and I don't have an answer for it. But I was wondering, is he really in a wheelchair, or is that just like a part of the character? Because it wouldn't be inconceivable for a dwarf to be in a wheelchair, but I don't know if he's wheelchair bound or was at that point.
I don't know,
career.
But if he was an Ewok, he made this and that the same year, so he's probably not in a wheelchair.
Probably not in a wheelchair. Okay, yeah, thank you. I was leaning towards that too.
If there was time, if there was time in between those movies, you know, like Jedi came out way earlier and then this came out later, then sure. But they came out the same year. So unless he had a horrific accident, he's probably not in a wheelchair.
So the whole film follows Chuck Norris. He plays J.J. McQuaid, and he is a Texas Ranger.
Yeah, and while they don't, quote, you know, so to say, run him through the ringer, as my mother would always say, they do it to literally everyone else in his life. The entire film.
It's like Walking Tall.
Yeah, and he doesn't shed a tear and barely even an emotion.
That's because he's a man.
When he's buried alive with his truck, what's the first thing he does? Pops a beer.
Beer. Brought to you by the Beer Council. Beer. It's what's for beer.
Yes.
Yes. Now, we know he's a Texas Ranger because everybody calls him Ranger.
Yeah, they don't even call him McQuaid. You would think that that is what they would call him, is McQuaid.
No one ever calls him McQuaid, barely. And I apparently there's a famous drinking game where you take a shot every time they say Ranger, which you can't do because they say Ranger around 118 times during the film.
Jesus. Yeah, that's a trip.
That's
to
how
the
you
hospital.
Know he's. But that's how you know he's a Texas Ranger. That, and he has a badge on every layer of his clothing. Did you catch that in the beginning? He's wearing a shirt with the badge, and he goes to his truck and puts on a vest, and the vest has a badge. And it's like, I bet you his underwear has a badge. I'm surprised his bare chest didn't have a badge during that scene later.
Right?
Yeah. But he's a Texas Ranger, and he's out for bad guys, and he kills some Mexican banditos in the beginning, saves some, not all of them, but saves some cops. But then the whole film becomes him trying to track down this arms dealer played by David Carradine.
Right.
Right. Now, when I was watching with Holly, David Carradine walks out from the helicopter. I think he walks out from the helicopter in the first shot. And first two things she says to me is, that the guy that died jerking off, hanging himself? And it's like, yes, that's him. It's like, he's wearing a sweater. It's like, that's right. That's why he's an awesome bad guy
in Texas.
Because he's wearing a sweater in El Paso.
Hey, it's actually there's a very large consensus that he was murdered in Thailand, and it was made to look like he was doing that.
That's
one of the things I've read. Even Robert Carradine, which is crazy. Robert Carradine, his brother, he was in Revenge of the Nerds. That actor.
Yeah.
Even he believed that his brother was murdered. And it was made to look that way. And then not that long ago, just this year, I believe, Robert Carradine, his brother, hung himself as well. Yeah.
That's a pattern.
Wow. It's you know, mental health.
That's like Holly's side of the family. Decapitation runs on the men's side of her family.
I'm sorry, what?
Decapitation runs in the family on the male side. Decapitation runs in the family on the male side in her family line. All the men die from decapitations. It's weird.
A little. Yeah. I mean, where do they work? A samurai shop? I mean, what the fuck?
I don't know.
It's like, listen, come on down to the lawnmower shop, you know?
Lone Wolf McQuaid doesn't have that problem because he's divorced. So he has his ex-wife and young nubile daughter who is like the Chekhov's hostage.
Oh, right.
Like the minute you meet her, it's like, yep, the bad guys, David Carradine's going to have her like in a heartbeat. We know this. We know this is coming. It's not a question.
Yep.
Yeah. But so they use her to get him into looking for the gun runners with a very hackneyed side plot where she has a boyfriend. So they go out kissing in the desert and they witness, and they happen to witness them stealing, the military shipment.
Right.
And the boyfriend that we met one scene earlier gets gunned down, and then she gets pushed over in a car and survives. And he's like, "Oh, I have to get to the bottom of this and find out what's going on."
How the fuck? And she's not even. That?
Yeah, and she's not even like a witness. She didn't see anything. The stupid boyfriend, the one that didn't drive the car away when he saw the headlights, he's the one that died, right. Or he's the one that saw anything. So it's not like she's even a witness. So there's no reason to go after her except for later, where he's just like, "Oh, I just want to make it personal now." So David Carradine's a real weird bad guy, and all he really is trying to do is instigate McQuaid to fight him.
Yeah, well, and also he's a karate champion, and they obviously played on that because he was in the TV show Kung Fu. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah. It was, and you know, Chuck Norris is a kung fu action star, so it's like, yes. So, you know, it's like two superpowers are going to go up against each other. That's basically what they were shooting for with that.
Yeah. I believe in David Carradine's biography, he says that there was no actual contact between them during the fight sequences, because there were rumors that there was like a feud between them and they were fought for real or whatever. And he's like, no, we never touched. He's like, we never touched each other. Although the funny thing though is apparently his contract said that his character couldn't be defeated in hand to hand combat. So that's why at the end, Chuck Norris blows him up with a hand grenade.
Oh my God. And you know what? It's I don't fucking doubt that for 1 second, because when they bury Chuck Norris alive in the truck, one would think, because his partner is watching the whole thing, one would think partner would, you know, after he gets rid of all the bad guys, he would dig him out. And it's like, no, that can't happen. Chuck Norris and his super Dodge, okay, his super Dodge Ram has to.
Well, I have a note. I have the note here. Hey, McQuaid has an overthruster.
Right. It's like he cannot be saved. That doesn't happen.
So, exactly.
So he just turns on that supercharger and just drives himself out of a fucking hole that's, I don't know, 10 feet deep.
I like when he grabs the Uzi and he just like just sprays it left and right. And then you show it's like right out of like a Weird Al video, like the Rambo video. He's like sprays it nowhere, everywhere. And you show you cut to them and the guys are standing in totally different areas and they all go down at the same time. It's like, oh, it's like, really, Uzi? You're sharpshooting with an Uzi. That's good. You're good. Yeah. A lot of Uzis in this film. 80s were big on the Uzis.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah. And then David Carradine comes out with a tank.
Yeah, it's just...
I don't know. It wasn't an impressive tank, though. It was kind of a shoddy tank.
Yeah, it's what production could get.
Yeah, it wasn't like the movie Tank. It wasn't a real tank. It was, yeah.
Well, maybe it's
like the little ones they send out.
That movie Tank, didn't that come out like the same year or a year later?
It was around the 80s. That's all I know. I don't remember.
Well, what I'm getting at is you can't have that tank. We're using that for another movie. And now that one is Gardner. The hell's his first name?
James Garner.
Yeah. James Garner. And C. Thomas Howell. Mm-hmm. I actually watched that not that long ago. On purpose.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We have a video up where I described it to you because you hadn't seen it in a while.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's up on YouTube.
I must have watched it not too long after that then.
Okay.
I don't remember why I watched it on purpose, but I ended up watching it on purpose.
this is definitely in that vein. I mean, but this is just like, again, these 80s, early 80s films where when he drove the truck out of the ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like screaming, you know, with beer dripping down his face. That's what Holly was turning me like. This was written for a 12-year-old child. This was written for a boy. This is a children's film. It's like, yes, I know, dear.
I mean, not only is he screaming, but he's holding the steering wheel with his head back going, ah! like he's, you know, piloting an airplane. Like that's what that scene looks like.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and I love that scene as a kid. I always waited for that scene. That's the scene I'm waiting for the whole movie. It's like, that's the part I want. I wasn't even interested in the ending. No. After that scene, the whole movie was boring for me as a kid.
I mean, like they throw the daughter off. So in a nutshell, they throw his daughter off. He kills the dog. I'm going to try and do this in order. They throw the daughter off the cliff. They hospitalize the daughter, kill the boyfriend. Okay.
Right.
Then they kill his friend LQ.
No, they kill the dog next.
I thought the dog was after LQ.
I'm pretty sure the character.
Oh, is that what the name of the dog? Pretty sure. I'm almost positive the dog dies third.
Okay.
They kill LQ next. Carradine steps on his neck and snaps it.
Right.
Right. Then they kill the dog.
Oh, and they also kill. Yeah, and they also killed. They killed Dakota, and they killed Larry from the Bob Newhart show.
Oh, yes. They killed him right after they killed LQ.
I forget his name.
Remember his name, but I was like, oh, that's the dude from Blade Runner.
Yeah, same thing.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, here he is. William Sanderson.
Okay.
The character's name was Snow in the film with the glasses. Which you almost don't recognize him with the glasses because they really, you're not used to seeing them with glasses like that. Very thick.
Then they kill the dog.
Yes.
And that's kind of like, that's the last straw.
Right.
And then they kidnap the daughter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they take her to Mexico.
Yeah. And it's all just because he wants to fight McQuaid.
That's really it. That's it. Like he's got his shipment. He's got his cargo, but he won't leave it alone. Well, because earlier in the film, Robert Carradine, he does like a little karate and he also has a personalized plate that says karate, but spelled with a K, C.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm wondering if that's like a take on Carradine, you know? Because it's kung fu, it's like Carradine. I don't know. I'm probably reading into that too much.
Possibly.
But I wouldn't fucking doubt it. I can't die in hand-to-hand combat.
But he does a little public sparring at this event.
Yeah, karate champion. And then him and Chuck Norris almost get into a fight at that point, but it's broken
up. He challenges Chuck Norris, and Chuck Norris is like, I'm not fighting you. And so he sends his goon in the mess with the guy from Eating Raul to try to instigate a fight. And Chuck Norris takes them all out. But he's like, I'm still not fighting you because he's the bigger man.
That's it.
Because he is Walker. No. Sorry. He is Ranger. McQuaid.
Ranger McQuaid.
Ranger McQuaid.
McQuaid the Ranger.
Yes.
So, I mean, from that point on, it's just like, they're going to fight, you know, it's going to happen. It's happening. So.
Yeah. So
the whole movie just builds up to it.
We're about 2/3 of the way through the film. And I say, I don't remember much of this film at all as a kid. So I was surprised. I'm surprised that the wife's still alive. I thought that like he'd kill her too.
You mean the ex-wife? It would be.
No, the girlfriend, Carradine's wife.
Oh, Carrera.
Carrera.
Well, she dies by, at the end. Yeah.
At the very end. That's what I'm saying. So like like an hour into the film, I was like, I thought she was going to die. I guess I was wrong. And then it was like, oh,
there it is.
Oh, along with Leon Isaac Kennedy playing the FBI agent Jackson.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I'm watching it. I know. I'm watching it. I'm like, oh, I know this guy. I was like, wait a minute. What was he in? I was like, oh, wait. He was in Penitentiary. Yeah, he is.
No, I mean, I don't
remember. Oh, he's the main guy in Penitentiary that they send to jail.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen that.
Yeah, you've never seen the Penitentiary films?
I don't believe so. No,
they need to be put on the wheel immediately.
Okay, all right. I'll add it. Penitentiary.
You have to add. You know what? The Penitentiary trilogy has to be added to the wheel.
All right, we'll add it. Definitely
has to be. Shit, if you've never seen Penitentiary. Oh fuck! Oh man, that's a movie built for this show.
I might even have it. P-E-N-I.
P-E-N.
P-E-N-I?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have it.
Really? No, I have it. I think I have the first two, or maybe the first one. I might not have
was two it again? Or three.
Penitentiary.
Penitentiary.
Yeah, I guess they couldn't.
Oh, here they are. Yeah, I see them on your list. I do not have them. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's something.
All right.
I'll tell you that.
All right. Well,
that's another series of films that I grew up watching as a kid. Absolutely 100% should not have been watched by any children. But my parents, they didn't care.
One part of the film puzzled me.
Oh, okay.
The part where McQuaid is at his desk on the phone and he's doodling, and then it shows what he's doodling, and he's drawing nipples on a picture of somebody.
He gave somebody tits.
Why am I watching Chuck Norris doodle nipples? That's a weird directorial choice.
Yeah. I think it was a picture of the chief.
Even then, I don't know. It just seemed weird.
Yeah, when I saw it, I was like, oh, okay, clearly doesn't like that person. And I was like, oh, wait, I think that's a picture of the chief. Who, by the way, I was like, I know this guy, too. I know this guy, too. He played Coneface and Dick Tracy.
I never saw it.
And you could see right through that makeup. You could see that it's him.
I'm sure I've seen him in other stuff, but I don't remember. What was his name?
I don't remember his real name. I haven't.
What was it? Okay, I didn't know if he was the colonel or...
Yeah.
Okay, I don't recognize him.
He is R.G. Armstrong. He played Tyler.
Oh, yeah. He's been a ton of shit. He was in The Car. We reviewed The Car.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's been in a bunch of stuff. Oh, yeah. I've seen some of these, too. Race with the Devil, another one he was in that we reviewed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, shit. Race with the Devil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This makes the third film that we've reviewed with him in it. I'm positive of that.
All right.
No. The fourth, White Line Fever, another one he was in.
Oh fuck, he was in that too.
Yeah.
God damn. Yeah, I knew he looked familiar.
See, again, we're children of the 80s, so like everybody in this film we saw in countless other films, because this one we were at most saturated by 24/7 cable TV.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's we're the first generation to have 24/7 access to films in our homes. So I mean, yeah, one portion of that generation got brain rotted by the 24/7 television, but some of us glommed on to the movies being shown 24/7, and you know, this stuff, you just couldn't escape it. It became part of the background noise of that
decade. Mean, between Showtime, Cinemax, and HBO, specifically Cinemax showed everything. Mm-hmm. Cinemax whole thing was definitely quantity over quality. Cinemax whole thing was like, we're showing 300 movies this month. And it's like, uh-huh. You know?
HBO, do I want to see any of them?
Yeah, exactly. HBO and Showtime were like, we're showing high quality movies. And Cinemax is like, listen, we're just going to fucking show everything.
No, and HBO was like, we're just going to show Gung Ho over and over again.
Over and over and over. And Cinemax is like, listen, you like boobies? Stick around. Midnight and later. Every night after midnight was always something like that, but mainly on the weekend. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I told you there was this YouTube video that went over to the, it went through all the catalogs and it listed the number of times films were played in the 80s.
Oh, really?
And the number one was Bill Cosby himself. They played it like,
oh yeah,
nonstop,
constantly. I've probably seen that, and I'm not exaggerating 20 or 30 times. I've seen that.
Yeah, no,
easily it, that. It, what was number two? Do you remember?
I don't remember, but I know that Gung Ho was high on that list.
God damn! All right.
Yeah.
Well, I've seen Gung Ho 100,000 times too.
And I saw it in a theater.
Oh God, really?
Wow. Yeah.
No, I didn't see that in a theater. That was 85. Gung Ho was 85 or 86.
Yeah, it's all blur.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, there's it's not a good film. I wouldn't say it's interesting. It's an interesting film. They're really going for that Western, that 70s spaghetti Western vibe, with an 80s simplicity. You know, all the best we know is that he's a gun runner that stole weapons from the military to sell to traitors, you know, bad people. You know, nothing more granular than that. It's very broad strokes. And you don't even need that because the bad guy goes out of his way to taunt our hero repeatedly so that, you know, a final showdown is inevitable.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. So, so the film's really just a showcase of different, you know, you've got this is another film we've done in a row where you have the lead male character's problems that they can't commit to a real relationship. They can't drop their masculine guard to allow a feminine influence into their lives.
To the point of where they're like, you know what? Not only can he not have a relationship and he can't keep one, we're just going to kill the love interest so that he doesn't even have to try.
Yeah.
Because then at the end of the movie, he's helping his ex-wife and his daughter move to a new house for the daughter, which he's kind of against, but then he comes around and he's like, ah, it's my day off. I'm going to help you guys out. And then Keo comes by. He's like, listen, we got problems in town or at the bank, bank robbery. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, okay. It's my day off. He's like, they have hostages. And he's like, hostages?
And get then, my jetpack.
Yeah. And then he hops in his turbocharged Dodge Ram and drives away. And the wife just kind of, the ex-wife's just like, oh, you know, it's just like, he'll never change. Like she's mad. And then she's like, you know what? He's just never going to change. He's a hero. He's going to save the hostages.
Yes. It just reminds me of that. And I've told the story before, but I'm going to tell it real quick again. Of the only time I ever saw an episode of Walker, Texas Ranger was staying with relatives at like a beach house. And so it was like my uncle and a cousin. And what I didn't know going into it was that they both would watch this show as like a bonding experience and they both loved the show.
Oh God.
And I just assumed that everybody was in on the joke when I watched it. So we're all watching it. And it had to be the episode where he uses a jetpack to fly into a stadium to help hostages. It had to be the jetpack episode. And then when they mentioned that he sang the theme song, I lost it. And I was just mocking the shit out of this. Then later, I was like, you know, that's like their favorite show. They like watch it all the time. It's like, well, you tell me now. Yeah, it's like, how am I supposed to know this is somebody's favorite show? Jesus Christ, that's horrible.
That's some low-hanging fruit right there.
Yeah, and I just, it had to be the jetpack episode because how could I not make fun of that? Oh
wow.
But yeah, I never took Chuck Norris seriously as a kid, so it's surprising to me when I see adults do.
Oh yeah, no. Dude, I've seen every movie he's been in, every single one, because of my parents. And there is there is just no way I could ever take anything he did seriously, ever. You said you still haven't what?
Well, I still haven't seen some of his stuff, like the other Missing in Actions I haven't seen.
I've seen them all. Missing in Action, Missing in Action 2, Missing in Action 3, you know, what was Braddock. It's like, I've seen them all.
Yeah, Good Guys Wear Black, I never saw that. The Octagon, I don't think I've seen that. Invasion USA, I've never seen. Hero and the Terror, I don't think I've seen.
Only did I see Hero and the Terror, I mentioned this on the show before. I saw that in a fucking movie theater because my father took my mother and the three of us, took all five of us to go see Hero and the Terror for their anniversary. and then we went to the restaurant we always went to growing up for dinner.
Huh.
That is how much my parents fucking love Chuck Norris.
Well, all the ones I haven't seen are on the wheel, so I have more opportunities to see more Chuck.
Fuck. I saw Hero and the Terror in a goddamn movie theater.
But, I mean, what...
What would I
don't have
it?
Much else... I don't have much else as far as notes go. I mean, it's a very, very 80s film. You got, you know, the action sequences, like you said, are very bloodless, even though people are getting shot to shit.
Yeah. No, there's hardly any blood. As a matter of fact, when what's his face, the dude from Blade Runner, he gets all shut up with an Uzi.
Mm-hmm.
You see a couple of bullet holes and no blood.
Yeah, it's like I thought they killed this guy.
Yeah, riddled him with bullets, but.
So you could tell they were already aiming for a PG when they made the film because there was nothing to cut out. They shot the bloodless scenes to begin with. The only reason they got out of R was because of a couple of F-bombs. And then all it took was Chuck Norris schmoozing them to get them to drop it. So very indicative of the times. Very indicative of the times. As far as rating it, I don't have IMDb up yet.
It's currently a 6.3 on IMDb. It's very high.
Well, it's definitely...
See, here's the thing. I think it's better than a 5.
I was just going to say that. Yes,
it's better than a five, and it does border on a 6. So I could go 6 on this because I can't give it a 5. It's better. It's better than that.
I agree, but it doesn't deserve a 7.
It doesn't even deserve the 6.3 that it has. This should probably be somewhere around 5.7. Something like that. That's really where it should be, in the high fives, but I'm willing to give it a 6.
Yeah, but a lot of nostalgia is attached to this. I'm one of those people.
Very much.
Very much. Rewatching it now, this is a film for little boys.
It's rated PG.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is, dear. That's what I am.
All right.
Yeah.
You want to spin the wheel?
Oh, let's do it. We've been having some good spins on the wheel.
Yeah, we have. All right.
I'm gonna close this.
So just a reminder for everyone, we have a wheel that we spin. We have a few hundred movies on there. And we both get a veto.
Over 300 films.
Yeah. What we've been doing lately is we'll veto... If we don't like it, if we love it right out of the gate, we'll just review it. But we can have up to 3 spins here. So if we both veto, we do a third spin, and then we decide of the 3 which is the best one to do. So,
or we even spin a new wheel with just those 3, depending on how we feel.
That's what we did last week to get the Lone Wolf McQuaid. So,
yep.
All right.
I'm liking the best of 3. It adds a little bit of flavor to the pick.
I do like the best of 3 myself.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get this wheel.
Ooh. Spin it, baby. Spin it.
There we go. All right. You ready?
Ready. Ready.
I'm always interested to see how bad this music is. All right, what do we got? First spin. Body slam. Body slam.
It's an 80s wrestling comedy.
I mean, I imagine like that's, it's either that or it's porn.
it's not porn.
Nah, well, I wish.
I'll tell you, hang on a second. I'll tell you what year it came out.
Body slam.
Yep. Body slam, 1987.
Oh, God.
Starring Dirk Benedict and Tanya Roberts, and Roddy Piper's in it. Lou Albano's in it. Billy Barty's in it. John Astin's in it. Jesus, yeah. A down on his luck music manager for the fictional rock band Kick finds his luck changing when he, by mistake, also starts managing a successful wrestling duo.
So they obviously, Hal Needham. Oh my God, isn't that the guy that did Megaforce?
Yeah. He's a stunt director.
Fuck, Smokey and the Bandit. Those are his stunt credits, but goddamn.
I mean, it's not No Holds Barred.
No. But clearly they're harping on the success of how huge wrestling was in the 80s.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely what it is. That's why you got.
Do you want to veto it or you want me to veto it?
you veto this one.
I'm going to veto it. Although, all right. I don't think I would. If it comes down to it, I probably wouldn't mind watching a film like that. Just because.
Oh, shit. Charles Nelson Reilly's in it.
Oh, really? Like when I was a kid, I was huge in the wrestling. It's one of those things where, you know, like you were saying with watching Walker, Texas Rangers, like how could that be anyone's favorite show and they bond over it? It's like, I don't know how anyone watches wrestling as an adult now and is entertained by it. It's like, I get it. You know, we all know it's fake, but, you know, they punish them, their bodies. They, you know, they really do, but it's fake outcomes. But it's like, how do you watch this as an adult and it's walk like, yeah, away like feeling like your IQ hasn't dropped? You know what I mean?
It's like we were all eight once. We get it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I can't watch this fucking tripe now. When I was a kid, sure. I loved it, but I'm an adult now. I'm not
right, spin that wheel again.
Watching this shit anymore. Anyway, all right, let's go. Dirty Benson 2. Batman franchise.
Oh,
I mean, where do you go with that? We've never reviewed the first Batman film. We'd have to start there, right?
I would start all the way back with the one from the 1970s with Adam West.
That Batman film. Okay.
I've never seen it.
I've seen bits and pieces.
Same here. I grew up with bits and pieces of it, but never actually watched it begin and end.
I don't think I want to watch the Adam West Batman.
Oh no, I'm vetoing the shit out of that. Yeah.
All right, here we go. Third spin. If we don't like the third spin, we will put all three in the wheel and let the wheel decide.
Unless we
mutually come to an agreement. Okay. All right. One more. Here we go. Ooh, shit. Geely.
Body slam it fuck is.
Yeah, we're going to review body slam. At least I could I'll probably enjoy a film like Body Slam.
Yeah. It never comes up. It's definitely an obscure film. I don't even know it existed.
I
just had it in the peripherals.
And that came out in 86.
87.
IMDb says 86. It might have been released in 87, but it's
IMDb stupid and wrong.
Okay. Now we got to look. It was released. The premiere was November of 86, and then it went wide May of 87.
Ah, okay.
So that's why it has an 86 release date, because it premiered in Las Vegas in 1986. They probably had some wrestling event too, like a fucking, not a WrestleMania, but they probably had something to promote it at the same time.
And by the movie poster, I believe we're back in L.A. before, you know.
Yeah. Oh, fuck, we are. Shit. Just, we've been on the West Coast for the last four episodes.
Yeah, it was nice to visit El Paso, but now we're back in the coast. You know, everything lined up. But yeah, Body Slam is our next review.
All right, Body Slam it is. I have to grab this one. Hal Needham. Jesus. All right. Body Slam. And then Rowdy Piper. What did he do? Welcome to Frogtown. That was, what, like a year or two earlier, I think.
Was it that early? I thought that was early 90s.
No, Welcome to Frogtown was before They Live. I want to say that was 83, 84.
I thought it was Hell Comes to Frogtown.
Oh, that's it.
It's Hell Comes to Frogtown.
It is. Not well.
88. 1988.
Oh. So that came out the same year as They Live. I don't know why I thought that was first. Maybe I'm thinking of something else. What did he do first? Poor Roddy. He died.
Yeah.
Died young. Jesus. Cardiopulmonary arrest caused by hypertension.
Steroids. Way to bring the room down, Joey.
Steroids, man. You know that's that's how that happened.
Oh, sure, definitely. Anyway, let's wrap up.
Man, he was in a lot of shit. Was he in an episode of Walker, Texas Ranger? He sure was. Oh, man. What's the first thing he ever did? I just got to look real quick. The one and only Leatherneck Joe Brady. He was uncredited. Did a bunch of wrestling stuff. Wrestling. Yeah, wrestling. Wow, lots of wrestling stuff. But it counts towards his acting credits. Because I guess because wrestling is fake. So according to this, the first movie is Body Slam.
The first movie he ever did was Body Slam.
Yeah, outside of doing like wrestling things. He was uncredited in the one and only. It was he was uncredited, so it must have been a small thing. So like the first movie, like his real movie.
His first credited role.
Yeah, is this movie. So,
okay.
It's interesting. And then after that, you know, he did They Live. So, sweet.
And this is a couple of years after Sheena. For Tanya Roberts.
Oh, yes. Yes. And she was also a Bond girl. Are on. I think she was a Bond girl a year before she did this.
She did Sheena. So we're catching Roddy Piper at the beginning of his career and Tanya on the decline.
Yeah, she kind of disappeared a little bit after the mid-80s.
Mm-hmm.
So.
No, this should be interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I 100% agree. All right. So.
All right.
Yeah. So next week. I don't know if we have a show next week, but if we do, Body Slam. Let's go ahead and end this bad boy.
Yeah, it'll be next week or the week after, or something like that. You know, we might miss a week or two, but we'll be back.
Week or two or month.
Yeah.
All right, go to our website, our newly updated website.
I saw that.
I know you did. I didn't even text you. I'm like, he's going to find it. He's going to see it. There's so much work I have to do. I have to create another page, but I was too lazy. That's why I have 25 episodes per page. That that last page, that current page, has like 33 episodes. it's just me. It's my OCD. Anyway, you can go to our website and you can download and listen to all of our episodes. You can click on the YouTube links and you can go to YouTube and watch the episode that we just recorded, plus many others. You can also go to iTunes and listen to the show there as well. You can go to facebook.com/moviesucktastic and you can see everything that's being posted there. You can go to letterboxd.com/moviesucktastic and you can see everything that Scott's doing for us there. You can also leave us voicemail at 908-514-4470. If you want to leave us email, it's themovieguys@moviesucktastic.com. If you want to download our podcast player, it's moviesucktastic.com/mst.apk. Not everything in the app works, but iTunes feed works, and that's really the only thing that matters. You can also download your favorite podcast player, and you can just do a search for Movie Sucktastic, and every episode comes right up. Do you have any words of wisdom, Mr. Wilson?
Don't kill Chuck Norris's dog.
Uh-oh. Am I being sabotaged?
Again.
Yes. What are you going to tell the good people out there?
Well, first, to like and subscribe. I haven't said that in a while.
A little bit more,
Like and subscribe.
Yeah, just a little bit more, vigor and like, say it like you mean it.
Like and subscribe, everyone. That better? Yeah, it's a lot better.
Is that it?
Can I watch Body Slam? Can I come on the podcast?
You want to watch Body Slam and help us review it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Body Slam doesn't sound like an inappropriate movie.
No, it's a wrestling movie.
Yeah, I was watching the end of it. I wouldn't call it appropriate.
It's rated PG. Should be fine. All
right. And when you first spun the wheel, that music sounded like it would be on Is the Price Right?
The Price Is Right?
Yeah.
All right, everyone. You heard the kid. Like and subscribe. Go and get all our shows, and we thank you, as always, for joining us for yet another episode of Movie Sucktastic. We'll talk to you next time when we review Body Slam. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Later.